My name's Mark Burgess, if you don't know who I am. And sometimes I get to inflict my preaching on you. You'll get to decide whether it's good or not. And I've been given the task of following on from other speakers about the life of King David and how that applies to us. And particularly I was given the topic of shepherd. And so, of course, I chose Psalm 23. And a lot of us have committed this verse to memory or this poem to memory. But because it's so famous, we often lose its impact because it is so famous. And it's often quoted, but its real impact is often lost. It becomes a memory verse and it doesn't really become an operating thing in our life. And what's not often brought out is that this passage is the context is Middle Eastern shepherding. And so this morning I'm going to sort of talk to you about shepherding and how that applies to us and how it applies to God as our shepherd. By the way, can you remove any image of Australian or American style ranches? They don't exist in the Middle East and they didn't exist in David's time. So there's no motorbikes, there's no helicopters, there's no sheep dip, there's no horses, there's no cowboys, there's none of that. So what I want to do is to read this verse, and I want you to read it with me, because it's such a powerful verse, a powerful poem. The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He makes me lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside still waters. He restores my soul. He leads me in paths of righteousness for his namesake. Even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for you are with me. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me. You prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. You anoint my head with oil, my cup overflows. Surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life, and I shall dwell in the house of the Lord forever. Now I want to read where Jesus picks up that image, and it's in John chapter 10. Truly, truly, I say to you, he who does not enter the sheepfold by the door, but climbs in by another way, that man is a thief and a robber, but he who enters by the door is the shepherd of the sheep. To him the gatekeeper opens, the sheep hear his voice, and he calls his own sheep by name and leads them out. When he has brought out all his own, he goes before them, and the sheep follow him, for they know his voice. A stranger they will not follow, but they will flee from him, for they do not know the voice of strangers. Remember that, because we're going to have a look at that later. So Jesus again said to them, truly, truly, I say to you, I am the door of the sheep. All who came before me are thieves and robbers, but the sheep did not listen to them. I am the door. If anyone enters by me, he will be saved and will go in and out and find pasture. The sheep comes only to steal and kill and destroy. I came that they may have life and have it abundantly. I am the good shepherd. The good shepherd lays down his life for the sheep. He who is a hired hand and not a shepherd, who does not own the sheep, sees the wolf coming and leaves the sheep and flees. And the wolf snatches them and scatters them. He flees because he is a hired hand and cares nothing for the sheep. I am the good shepherd. I know my own, and my own know me. It's an amazing verse, by the way. Just as the Father knows me, and I know the Father, and I lay down my life for the sheep. I read these passages together because I'm sure that's what the Apostle John would have wanted you to see, that there is a link between these two passages. There's a definite link. It's a hyperlink. There's a common context, a metaphor going on here. So keep your mind, keep your finger or screen open to both of those scriptures, because I'll be going between both of them. King David did not start out as a king. In 1 Samuel 16, we get this little story that is interesting. The prophet Samuel comes to Bethlehem in Judah, and he goes to a house of a guy called Jesse, who has a number of sons. And those sons are sort of laid out by the prophet Samuel. And the prophet Samuel goes through all of them, and he says, "Nah, nah, nah." And then he says, "Is there any others?" And Jesse, because he didn't really rate this boy much because he's the youngest, said, "Oh yeah, there's this guy who's out in the sheep with the sheep. He's my shepherd boy. He's also my son, but his name's David." And the prophet Samuel says, "Bring him to me." And he anoints him there and then as king of Israel. But one thing you see to remember from that is that he was probably very young. So here's an image that I sort of imagine in my mind when I see this story. Can you have the next slide, please? This is a photo from Afghanistan, of all places, where they still do shepherding the old-fashioned way. And this is a little young boy, and he's looking back at the camera. And his father is obviously a shepherd, but he's also the shepherd boy as well. And they're leading their sheep to pasture. You see, shepherd boys like this spent a lot of time with the sheep. They're not particularly well-dressed. They're not very well educated, and they would most likely smell a bit. Anyone that knows me knows I hate camping in all of its forms. Don't laugh. It's rude to laugh at the preacher, Wayno. I know your mother. She brought you up better than that. But, sorry, I digress. But I hate camping in all of its forms. I hate sleeping on the ground, and I definitely hate sleeping in a tent. But shepherd boys would do this all the time. This is their life. They would stay with their sheep even through the worst of weathers, the heat, the cold. Sounds hideous, but that's the life of a shepherd boy. But I think what I see there in David is that there's something else going on in this life as a shepherd boy, because we know from Scripture that he's doing other stuff while he's out there with the sheep. Like, for instance, he's learning the ways of God. He's looking at nature and seeing God in nature. Like, some of his psalms are beautiful and poetic because they're using the metaphor of what the world around and bringing that into his relationship with his God. He's learning about poetry. He's learning to play music, so we know that he played the lyre. He's also, all the while, he's fending off like predators that really want to eat those sheep, bears and lions and all that sort of stuff. They still had lions back then in Israel. And all the way, he's also killing like giants like Goliath in another story we've heard about. In the language today, I like to think of him as like a savant or a genius. I think he was a bit of a genius. "The Lord is my shepherd." This is an astonishing statement at the time. All of the gods that surrounded Israel were mean and cruel, and they demanded your obedience, or else they'll get you and they'll make your life a living misery. The God of David and the God of Israel is the God of he is our shepherd. Like for this passage that he says in Psalm 100, "Know that the Lord is God. It is he who made us, and we are his. We are his people, the sheep of his pasture." Now, several of you may be shocked to learn that this really isn't a positive metaphor to be called sheep. And I want to lay out some reasons why it's not such a positive metaphor. First of all, they get lost easily. They needed a shepherd to guide them and call them. And I'll show you a video in a minute of that. They can be very skittish. They can be very angry. They can be very ornery. And then they're not that easy to handle. So I sometimes watch a little bit of TV. And there's a TV show I like to watch. I know you're too holy to watch this, so please don't judge me. Please don't judge me. In series two, what I found really interesting is that one of the taglines of this show is that Clarkson's a bit of a numpty. He's a bit of an idiot. And his sidekick, Caleb, is like a whiz at everything farming. So Clarkson decides to buy some sheep for his farm. But he learns very quickly that sheep are not that easy to control. They run around like crazy beasts doing stupid things. They do everything the farmer doesn't want them to do. They escape a lot. So Caleb and Clarkson are constantly having to go to their neighbours' farms to track down the sheep who've somehow wandered off. And they can jump. I didn't realise they can jump over fences. That's something I learned. I didn't know that. And so they're all constantly off trying to bring these sheep back into line. Hence David saying, "Thy rod and thy staff will guide me." They are by nature unclean. Modern farmers manage this because they have to, otherwise the sheep will die. They get all sorts of things down the back end that needs to be fixed up, and I won't show you any images of that. I'll save you and spare you from that image. Some of you have personal experience of that. They also have to be dipped in this chemical stuff. David didn't have any of that. He had to literally wash their heads with oil and their fleece with oil. And he would literally have to pick out the parasites out of the fleece. Thanks, Wano, for that image. Hence, David saying, "He anoints my head with oil." Sheep are also helpless. Domestic sheep, that is. Wild sheep are a lot more better and agile on their feet than domestic sheep. Here's a picture. Can you? This is an ibex, and it's climbing a very steep dam wall. But there are many images like that around where you can see that how sheep are actually wild sheep are really, really agile. Domestic sheep are not like that. They are defenseless. They're awkward. They're weak and ignorant. How do you feel now being called sheep? It's good? Excellent. Great. Excellent. Fantastic. But also, the sheep are not that smart. They need protecting. So can I have the next image, please, Laura? Ancient shepherds in the Middle East would construct these pretty mangy piles of rock. That's a pretty organised one. Some of the images I saw were not that organised. They're little sheep pens up in the mountains, so that the shepherd would corral the sheep in at night, and once they're in that little pen, he would sleep in the doorway. So hence Jesus saying, "I am the door of the sheep, I am the gatekeeper." He's drawing on that image that David would know quite well. And the shepherd would corral them in by voice command. We'll see that in a minute. What I found interesting is I watch a lot of TV sometimes, and there was a show on Netflix that I spotted about living life and living long life. And they were just going around different places, and they happened to go to a place called Sardinia, which is one of my favourite countries in the world, Italy. I married an Italian, so I have to say that. But in this show, what I found interesting is that the shepherds would actually lead their sheep up into the mountains in summer, and they would milk the sheep, and then they would transport it down every day to be made into pecorino. And I don't know if you know what pecorino is. It's a cheese. It's amazing. Before I married an Italian, I had no idea there was such a thing called pecorino. But it's amazing on a little pasta sauce, by the way. But what they found out was that these shepherds are some of the most healthiest people on the planet, because they're constantly wandering up and down mountains. And they live to very, very long lives without modern sort of healthcare. They're definitely healthier than me, and I've lived in Australia all my life. But I haven't gone up and down mountains all day, Jeff. I'll look it too, don't I? Yeah. Pecorino, yes. It's lovely. Pecorino with a bit of Parmesan cheese and lovely Sorry, I digress again. I suppose... They have to be protected at night because there are things that want to eat them. Wolves, lions, bears, and other things that are up in the mountains that not really in Europe anymore. And David would have seen that. Hence he wrote, "Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I shall fear no evil, for thy rod and thy staff, they comfort me." David's a genius enough guy to know that the enemies he's talking about are real. They're predators, they're lions and bears, but they're also, when he was king, there were enemies around his nation that he needed to have God lead him through that, navigate through that. But he's also a genius enough guy to know that the enemy that we all face is a lot more scary. It's death. It's death. "Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death." But his rod and his staff, they comfort us. They guide us through that process. He's our shepherd through our life, but he's also our shepherd when we're in our, when at the moment of death. He's also our shepherd when we go through the other side and enter eternity for the first time. But there's one positive thing I want to focus on this morning about sheep, is that they have this amazing relationship with their shepherd. Now, I saw a lot of videos about sheep and sheep in the last couple of weeks. One amazing one you can look at, it's a little bit long, but there's two shepherds, and one will call his sheep and they will come, and another will call his own sheep and they will come. But they don't recognize each other's. The sheep learn to recognize the call of their shepherd, So there is one I want to show you, and it's only about a minute and a bit, so it's not that bad. It's not that long. But can you play that now for me, Laura? Can we have the sound up? Is it possible?
Come you. Come you. Come you.
Isn't that cool? That's cool, isn't it? No, that video blew me away when I saw it. I thought, that is amazing. But do you get the metaphor of what David is trying to say to us? Who's the shepherd? God, yeah. Yahweh. And then later on in John chapter 10, Jesus calls himself the shepherd. Who's the sheep here? We are. And what are the sheep meant to do? They listen for the call of the shepherd. And they're meant to respond and come to the call of the shepherd. Hence, do you see this, what we're meant to do? The tragedy is of our lives on this planet is that the majority of humans have actually forgotten what they're meant to do, which is to hear the voice of the shepherd and to respond and to come at the call of the shepherd. And you are the sheep who are learning to respond again to the call of the shepherd on your life. And you do that with other sheep, other people, who are also going through that very same process. That's the metaphor. It's amazing, isn't it? It's amazing. But here's the problem for us in 2026. Is that, I've said it before, but we're all fantastically rich compared to any dream of a person sitting 3,000 years ago in a sheepfold in Bethlehem would imagine. We have these fantastic homes that are just so safe and secure and comfortable. Like, for instance, we have like water running out of taps and we can have a shower every day. We don't have to sleep on the floor, you know. Because we're rich, being reliant on God offends us sometimes. God's asking for us to respond and be reliant on him, but we struggle with that because we're rich. And if we are not careful, we can lose the ability to hear the voice of the shepherd if we're not careful. Here's some of the things that I think are most offensive to us in 2026. I am not the center of my world. The shepherd is. We just sang it in that song. Jesus be the center of my life. Jesus be the center of my church. I don't get to say who I am. I don't get to make identity pronouncements about myself. The shepherd does that. I don't get to do whatever I want. The shepherd does that. I don't get to do life alone. Like, you know, I can't just wander off and say I'm a Christian and never interact with his other sheep. The shepherd doesn't want me to do that. He wants me to interact with you. And you are to interact with me as well as another sheep. But the question for us today is, are we willing to submit to the shepherd? Because he has big plans for his sheep. He's going to come back again. And he's going to lead us into this beautiful world where there's green pastures and still waters. So King David has a very long rule, and it's remembered as the golden age, but then he dies and it all starts falling apart. If you've read Kings and Chronicles, you would understand how that happened. The Babylonians come and conquer them, and then the Persians do the same, and then the Greeks come along, do the same, and then the Romans finally come along and conquer them for the last time. And then we come to a descendant of David living in Galilee called Joseph and Mary. And this is the family that is predicted in the prophets to produce a son who would be called Messiah, the Anointed One. We know him as Jesus. His birth was announced first to shepherds in the fields in Bethlehem. Do you get the symbolism? His birth is announced to shepherds in Bethlehem as a descendant of the shepherd who wrote Psalm 23. Jesus then grows up and he comes into Jerusalem one day in John chapter 10, and he does something like amazing. He heals a man born blind on the religious holy day of the Sabbath. And they say, how dare you heal on the Sabbath? And he answers them using language straight out of Psalm 23. So I'll give you some. In Psalm 23, God is the shepherd. In John 10, Jesus calls himself God. I am the good shepherd. In Psalm 23, God is the shepherd who provides a banqueting table in the midst of our enemies. In John chapter 10, 9, he says, I am the gate. They will come in and go out and find pasture. Jesus is the gatekeeper. He's the one that sits at the gate, protecting us from the thieves and the robbers. Hopefully, that you've seen in this poem of David that God is saying something about our lives here on this planet, and that he's reapplied this poem to himself to teach us how to live in this world. In the last couple of weeks, I've got very despairing about the planet and where we're at. And particularly, I watched the videos and the images of this young girl who, simply because she disagreed with the government, was shot and killed. And apparently that's okay now. And it made me despair of where we're at as a society. And in the midst of that, I thought to myself, what are you doing, God, in this world? And because I've been doing Psalm 23, I knew straight away what the answer is. You see, all the proud and the arrogant men, and the nations can rage and rage against God and do all they like, but God is doing something completely different under the surface. He's calling a bunch of people like you and me to be his sheep. Because one day, you and I are going to inherit this earth. And you and I are going to rule with King Jesus here on this planet. And all the proud and arrogant men will be finally and forever banished from this planet. And I can't wait personally for that day. I'm sick of the proud and the arrogant and the malicious and the cruel running this world. How much pain has been caused by people like that. So in application, I just want to finish up with a couple of things and then we'll close up and have cake. I think if we read Psalm 23, we just got to come to the conclusion that he wants us to follow him as sheep follow their shepherd. There are many scriptures that would say this, but I'll just give you a couple. In Matthew 16:25, Jesus says to us, deny ourselves and take up his cross and follow him. In the Apostle Peter in 1 Peter 2:21 says, for this you have been called, because Jesus Christ suffered for you, leaving you as an example, that you might follow in his steps. So I think at the very least, we need to take his word and say, well, one of the jobs we have to do is learn to follow him and learn to listen for his voice. I think also we need to understand that he loves us in this world. We may feel beaten up by this life. And quite frankly, if you're young, it doesn't get any better as you get older. In fact, it gets worse. But the great shepherd still loves us and cares for us. And we will see him face to face one day. So I know you know this, but there are a couple of things that we should be doing and learning to do in following our shepherd in this life. I think we need to read and study his Bible more. Yeah? We need to learn about him a little bit more. I think we need to learn to pray to him a little bit more. And that might mean praying on a comfy chair or like on the floor or standing or going for prayer walks or whatever. We just need to learn to pray more. We need to sing more. Praise and worship him more. Because singing is a communication language. Like in the video, the shepherd sang to his sheep. And the sheep sang back. And then they come running. Here's one. We need to practice resting in him more. This is a hard one, actually, in our life to actually do this one. This is actually really, really hard. Because resting in him means to, like, turn some things off. Which is hard for me to say because I don't love my phone and TV. But I need to turn it off. And I need to sit in silence and listen to what my shepherd is trying to say to me. It's good for us. Good for us. However, we also need to understand that in this life, we will encounter people that will challenge us and will cause us some grief. So I don't have any of your examples, so I'm going to use one of mine. My brother-in-law, Jeff, is a lovely guy. But he is not a Christian. He is definitely not a Christian. He said it to me many, many times that I don't need all this God stuff. I don't need it. It's good for you, Birch. It's good for you. I'm glad you have that. I'm glad it was such a great comfort to you when you lost your wife. That's fantastic. Or when you lost your mother. That's beautiful. But don't bother me with that because I don't need that sort of stuff. Have you heard lines like that from your family members? I'm sure you have. And it's not a picking, I'm not picking on Jeff. That he's just a representative of the culture in which we live in. Because we like to think of ourselves as needing nothing. We like to think of life as like a great game of collecting all these experiences and toys and then we die. And the winner is the one with the most toys. That's Jeff's idea of life. That's why in every secular funeral I've ever been to, they say things like, have you ever noticed this when you go to a funeral? They say, he's a wonderful guy. He was fantastic. He loved his family above all else. Yeah. And, oh, he loved the West Coast Eagles or Fremantle or whatever, I don't care. But as if that matters to anything. And now he's looking down on us from that great thing that we can't define or do and say anything about. But he's looking down on us. He's saying, yeah, go get him. Drink beer for me. Of course, in that definition, there's no hell. There's no judgment. It's just a continuation of life in a different format. But you and I know that that's not the story of life. Because you're here today because you believe that the Bible is the answer. The Bible provides a story that gives all of our lives meaning and purpose. That's why you're here. God created us to enjoy Him and to enjoy Him forever. He knew when He created us that we were going to rebel. That's what Genesis 3 is about. He also knew that when we were in rebellion, that we cannot possibly do anything about that ourselves. We cannot save ourselves. History and my life itself is a long, long history of I cannot save myself from my own sin. In fact, as I've got older, I've found that my sin is actually a little bit more pervasive and subtle and much more dangerous than I ever gave it credit for. It lurks within me and it lurks within you as well. But God came into this world as that little baby who grew up to become that man who died on a cross and then rose again from the dead so that we can be His sheep again and learn to listen, to hear the voice of God again. And that's what we're here doing today. We're learning to listen to the voice of the shepherd, and we're learning to find out how life can be done as a sheep, as a sheep of His pasture in a world that's sick with sin. That's what we're here for. But I'm also here to tell you that He's not finished with His plan. We're still looking for that great day when Jesus is going to come back again and defeat the forces of death and darkness, and all the proud and arrogant men who have ever lived on this planet will be imprisoned with the Satan and all of his human followers. And then He will come and institute a kingdom on earth where it is impossible to sin. And we follow Jesus because we know that that's our future. We can put a definite plan in play that my brother-in-law Jeff cannot even begin to think about. I know deep in the heart of Jeff, I know because I've spoken to him many times, that he's got a little bluff, he's got a great mask of like individual rugged manliness, but deep inside there is just that little boy who has no idea what life is about, and he's covering it up because he doesn't want to come and listen for the voice of the shepherd. And you have people in your family, and if they're men, normally they would have this front, this mask of like masculine individuality. I don't need anybody. And it's all a bluff. It's all a front. Because deep in their heart, they know that they're lost and they don't want to admit it. I preached on this scripture the last time I preached. If I know you won't remember because that's what we do, but I will read it to you again. It comes from Revelation 21, and we need to keep reading this. And please focus on verse 3 and hopefully you'll hear the echo of Psalm 23 here. Then I saw a new heaven and a new earth, for the first heaven and the first earth had passed away, and the sea was no more. And I saw the holy city, the new Jerusalem, coming down out of heaven from God, prepared as a bride adorned for a husband. And I heard a loud voice from the throne saying, that's God speaking, behold, the dwelling place of God is with man. He will dwell with them, and they will be his people, and God himself will be with them as their God. Do you get the reference to Psalm 23 there? Surely I will dwell in the house of God forever and ever. Amen. And he will wipe away every tear from their eye, and death will be no more, and neither shall there be mourning, nor crying, nor pain anymore, for the former things have passed away. If you don't know him fully today, I think my call is that, my hope is that you would be encouraged, that you would be awakened to the real purpose of your life, which is to follow Christ. And if you do understand this, and you are the sheep of his sheepfold, you have walked with him, my encouragement to you today is that he's calling you to, well, a couple of things. He's calling you not to be stubborn sheep who wander off doing their own thing. But he's also calling you to come and rest. Come and rest. And enjoy him. And enjoy your life here on this planet. Enjoy the people around you. Enjoy the times when you are enjoying a good meal with friends. Enjoy Christmas and all the rhythms of life we have. He's calling you to rest. You can start that journey today if you want to. So I'd encourage you, I'm going to finish now and stop inflicting my voice on you. But if you need to get your heart right with God, I would encourage you to come to the front at the end, and I'm sure somebody will come and pray with you and start you off on that journey. And may God bless you all.